power structures of the European Union while a transitional period of up to 2 years was taking place. Yeah. That is ridiculous. We may stay, we may leave the European Union, but for as long as we are there, people in the United Kingdom have an equal right to be represented in those any of the other 27 member states. So I say we should acclimatise ourselves now to the idea of fighting these elections, and I say also it would be a good thing. I know it will be an embarrassment for some people who thought we'd get it all done and dusted by now, but it's proving to take a little longer than people thought. And that means that as we are taking whatever time is required, we should be represented. I would predict two things if we would have had these elections on the 23rd of May. The first is that the turnout would be considerably greater than the 35% who voted in 2014. And the second would be, and I will hope to be judged in this, that the main losers in those elections will be the UK Independence Party, who fluked the result last time. Now, whether or not people respond to those elections will depend how this Parliament dragged, kicking and screaming to those ballot boxes. It will not be a good look. But if we embrace the opportunity for people in this country to have their democratic say, we may, in fact, be able to change the narrative completely on how this matter is being addressed. We may be able to get rid of much of the ill-tempered debate that has taken place and begin the process of political healing in this country. So, Mr. Speaker, that's why we will not offer any objection to this statutory instrument here tonight, but I say it is only one small step along a much longer road that we now need to take.
Sir John Redwood.
Mr. Speaker, the mood outside this House is overwhelming that we should get on with it. And the nation heard the Prime Minister and Government promise on countless occasions that we would be leaving on the 29th with or without a deal. It's quite true, the Prime Minister always said she really wanted a deal and she expected to get a deal, but she never ruled out leaving without a deal, and she was right not to do so. Indeed, for many months she used to say no deal is better than a bad deal, and left open the possibility that what was on offer was so bad that it would be better just to leave. Now, I'm not someone who thinks we just leave. I think we leave with a series of deals, and I'm very pleased that the government has put in place the essential deals we need in order to leave. Of course, we needed an aviation deal and a haulage deal and a government procurement deal and all the rest of it. And those things have been sorted out, I'm told, over the long 2 years, 8 months that have elapsed since the original vote. And I'm very pleased that the government, in parallel, with constantly telling us it was going to get an agreement that we would like, carried on with so-called no-deal planning, which, as I said, is many-deal planning. It's having a series of lesser deals to make sure that things work smoothly so that we were in a good position so that we had options. I wish to develop my argument a little. So the government put us in that position, and I think what we haven't heard from the Minister, but more importantly from the Prime Minister, who is responsible for this, what the case is for this delay that we are now being asked to approve in United Kingdom legislation. Because it seems to be mainly geared to the idea that this House will accept the withdrawal agreement after we should have left rather than before we were going to leave. But we now learn that the actual deal offered was not allowing the government up until May or early June to put the thing through. The EU was very tough on the government and said you actually have to get the withdrawal agreement through before the official leaving date of the 29th of March under the previous understanding, leaving the government now only a couple of days to do that. And the question must be to the government, why has it taken so long to get this agreement into a shape which the House would pass? And why have they been so dilatory about presenting or representing this agreement, or even better, why didn't they renegotiate it to get it into a form where it might be worth considering again? Because there is, as the Speaker has rightly posed to the government, the issue of is there any point in constantly bringing the same thing back time and time again when the answer is negative? And the government has not really set out today, in the context of wishing a delay, why suddenly it would be different now that they've left it for so long, and why did they leave it so long if it was so time critical? They've had plenty of months from the original Chequers disaster when they first adumbrated this policy and had mass resignations from the government and the Conservative Party, through to today, when many more resignations later, there is still a considerable reluctance by sections of the governing party to vote for the withdrawal agreement. So I fear I'm not free to support this proposal this evening, because I think there hasn't been a good case for delay, and I don't think they've made the case with the public as to why we have to be let down when there was such a very clear promise embedded into the law, into the Withdrawal Act, which this Parliament passed. And I would recommend to the government that they think again about how they wish to use the time they are trying to buy. I also have a lot of sympathy with my honourable friend from Stone over the crowning irony of the position the government has placed us in, where they are claiming superior European law to do something that the Leave majority in this country does not want them to do, but they're not so sure of their legal ground that they want this House to actually endorse it, because they know otherwise there might be legal difficulties, but to do it on the very piece of legislation which is taking back control is just almost unbelievable. This House has rightly decided to back the vote of the British people and by a solemn statute say we are taking back control, and from the day that that comes into effect, all laws and matters relating to government and public business will be settled in this House of Commons and not by the EU. And we're now told that the Prime Minister can have a conversation in an evening meeting around a council meeting in Brussels. She can be pushed off her request and given something completely different from her request, and we're told that trumps anything the UK Parliament does. Well, if you wanted to sum up why 17.4 million people voted the way you did, you couldn't do better than take that example. We do not want this House sidelined or presumed upon. This House should decide when we leave the European Union, and it shouldn't have been settled in that way.
Sir Bernard Jack.
I do beg the Honourable Lady's pardon. Angela Eagle and then other colleagues. Angela Eagle. Fewer than 29 minutes to go. Angela Eagle.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've seen today elements of the Conservative Party in high dungeon or dudgeon. A dudgeon. Or maybe they should be in the high dungeon. In high dudgeon about the fact that the Minister has brought a statutory instrument before us today to take away the cliff edge that they were relying on plunging this country over in order to get the kind of clean break, catastrophe Brexit, that many of them secretly want. And I never thought in this House that I'd sit here and see considerable members of a government party, the party opposite, planning on that basis to cause such damage to our economic prospects and the prospects for prosperity for all of my constituents and everybody else's constituents. It's a period of history that I hoped I would never see. Now, the Prime Minister is entirely responsible for getting all of us into the mess that we've seen develop over the last few months, as she's repeatedly, after putting a definite leaving date onto the face of the original Withdrawal Act, put off the vote and put off the vote on her withdrawal agreement because she wanted, I believe, to face this House with an unpalatable choice between her deal, which many on all sides of the House have serious problems with, and the catastrophe of no deal. Now, in a modern, mature Parliament, I believe that that kind of process and that kind of choice should never be allowed to face us. And whether we voted leave or remain, whichever side of the argument we were on in 2016, We should not have been put in that position, and it was the date on the face of what is now the Withdrawal Act that allowed the Prime Minister to have the leverage that she somehow thought would work to her advantage. She's now been forced to resort to the leverage that we hear happened at the 1922 committee tonight, where she basically said, back me so you can then sack me, and gave another date, the 22nd of May, for when she would announce her departure. So now we have, whilst the country's future is still in the air and not decided, the horrible self-regarding spectacle of the next runners and riders in the Conservative Party to take to see who will inherit the poison chalice that the Tory psychodrama of Brexit has injected into the body politic in this country. So I believe that the Minister's SI today is an inevitable consequence of creating a false cliff edge which was put there for blackmail purposes, but which, because there still remain many, many sensible, responsible people on both sides of this House, we have expressed the wish that we will not allow the country to plunge over. And I just want to take this opportunity to say that the Minister is correct to bring the SI, and the Minister is also correct to surmise that this Parliament will not allow the choice to be the catastrophe Brexit of leaving with no deal. And we will not allow this Prime Minister or any future Prime Minister to blackmail this country with those appalling and disrespectful, dangerous tactics. So I support the Minister's SI tonight. I hope that in due course we will be able to perhaps have a much longer delay, start this process again and do it properly with some of the kind of respect that we've seen develop in the indicative votes debate that we've had today, and the cross-party responsible debate that we've seen begin to develop, which we all know should have happened in this country when the Prime Minister crossed the threshold of Downing Street 2 years ago. She's got the process exactly the wrong way round. There's been permanent damage done to our economy, our prospects, our prosperity, and more than anything else, our reputation in the world, because this Prime Minister has got this so disastrously wrong. And I hope that whoever is her successor, they will not take this place as a place that can be blackmailed like she has, and that they will not play Russian roulette with the prosperity and the future of this country. Anyone who decides that that is a reasonable way to behave does not deserve the honour of being our Prime Minister.
Sir Bernard Jenkin.
Mr Speaker, I thought the Right Honourable Lady gave the game away when, amid all her hyperbole and rhetoric, she betrayed her desire for a much longer delay. That is what the Remain majority in this House really want. And I was rather shocked to hear the Honourable Member for Greenwich and Woolwich say that this measure should be entirely uncontroversial. He might not have been listening, but certainly millions of our voters have been listening, and they were expecting to leave the EU on the 29th, Council's exit day for the 29th of March. And the way the Council decision was agreed is exactly why people voted to leave the EU, as my right honourable friend for Wokingham set out. History will mark this day as the moment that this House decided to turn, to start to turn against the decision to leave the EU and against the mandate upon which most MPs in this House were elected. So far, oh yeah, there are exceptions. I'm talking about the 85% of MPs, votes that were cast for pro-Brexit parties. And so far, The EU's withdrawal agreement has been rejected for good reason, not least because it is so far from taking back control. One point I agree with the Honourable Member for Edinburgh East over our laws, borders and trade. And in fact, if this goes through, the next time the Minister brings an order to this House to implement an EU directive or a decision or a regulation, there will probably have been no minister sitting at the table in Brussels to agree that decision or even to be there to be outvoted. It will just be handed down through the withdrawal agreement. Now, Mr. Speaker, I've never considered myself a populist or a man of the people. But it is only those like me who will vote against this decision to cancel leaving the EU on the 29th of March who are truly representing what the British people decided in the referendum. We are the real majority in this House, which are so sorely underrepresented by members of this House. I'm going to press on. But this House is now embarked on an unprincipled constitutional experiment. PACAC, the committee I chair, recently heard from a retired Lord Chief Justice that nothing like this experiment has occurred since the recasting of the role of Parliament since 1688. That is just how radical this experiment is. And I very much recognise the sincerity of many honourable and right honourable members who are involved with that experiment, but they have resorted to the most questionable constitutional methods, which leave no government or anyone else accountable for what is being decided. Who will the voters now hold to account for the outcome of the Brexit question? Moreover, this process has been supported by those either embarking upon embellishing the discredited withdrawal agreement with even greater restrictions on our right of national democratic self-determination, or seeking to disrupt or stop Brexit altogether in defiance of the election promises upon which most of us were elected. I regret, therefore, to conclude on these matters, and including on this order, this House of Commons is left with questionable democratic legitimacy. I give way to my right honourable friend.
I absolutely endorse what my honourable friend has said, and to remind those members, including those on our own side, that they voted consistently for the Acts of Parliament to give effect to all the enactments, including the Withdrawal Act, and that to pursue these objectives is effectively to reverse their decisions on absolutely specious and unacceptable grounds.
I agree with my honourable friend, and I will vote against this order. I will vote against this order. Let me say just something briefly about the mess that we are now in. I can fairly claim to be one of the minority in this House who are authors of the voters' referendum decision, and I'm proud of that. Most of us who voted Leave have stuck with what we believe one way or the other. We are not authors of what the Remain majority in this House, with the government, have made of Brexit, nor of what they continue to inflict upon our sad and disillusioned voters.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Kirsty Blackmore.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I can't promise that I'll speak without hesitation, repetition or deviation. I probably won't limit myself to a minute, but I'll do my best on all of those counts. To begin with, I'd like to start by saying that having an extension to the exit day is a good thing. For a number of reasons, but the extension that has been asked for and the extension that we are discussing tonight is not the extension that we should be faced with. I want to look back at how we've got into this mess. Now, a number of people have mentioned the fact that people are expecting us to leave on the 29th of March. That is the expected date. When people voted in the June 2016 referendum, not one person mentioned the 29th of March 2019 as exit day, nor did they mention the 12th of April 2019 or the 22nd of May 2019. They voted on a proposition whether they should remain in or leave the EU. That was the proposition. No discussion was had about the actual exit date. The other thing is, while we're on this subject, nobody during that EU referendum expected that Theresa May would be Prime Minister. Sorry, the Prime Minister would be the Prime Minister. They did not expect that the deal that was presented before Parliament would be the deal, because this is not what was discussed during the course of the EU referendum. For anybody, the deal of the UK people is absolutely wrong. I give way.
Can I just remind the Honourable Lady that David Cameron said that if the referendum resulted us leaving, he would trigger Article 50 the day after. He did come, but he didn't do that. He actually resigned.
One of the things about Article 50 is that it is a two-year period with a possibility of extensions. Tabling Article 50 does not mean that you leave exactly 2 years after Article 50 is put in. There is a negotiation period. And anybody with any ounce of sense would, for a start, not trigger Article 50 until they were in a position where they could negotiate something that Parliament would agree with and that the people would agree with, but also would negotiate extensions on the basis of waiting until they are ready to leave before they actually leave.
Well, lady, for giving away. I must say, Mr Speaker, Cameron, ever having said that he would trigger Article 50 the day after, the Honourable Gentleman shouts from a sedentary position. I just said I'm not aware of it. I'm certainly aware that the Leader of the Opposition said that. Yes, but can I ask the Honourable Lady, I'm sure she paid a lot of attention to the Leave campaign. Does she remember the Leave campaign making it very clear to the British people that we would not be leaving the European Union before a deal on our future relationship had been secured? Exactly. And indeed, that absolutely has not been done by this government.
The Right Honourable Lady is, as ever, absolutely correct in this regard, promised a number of unicorns. It is the case that a number of people on those benches still believe that those unicorns exist and are wandering around in vain. The problem is that those unicorns do not exist. They never existed. They were promises that were made to the people of these islands that could never, ever have been met. I want to discuss the red lines that have been presented along this way. One of the biggest issues that we have with this whole situation is the red lines that have been drawn up and have been adhered to with some kind of iron grip. So there was a red line. There was red lines that were put forward that created the Chequers Agreement. The Chequers Agreement, if in the Prime Minister's shoes, they would have said the most important thing for our economy is to have a deal that protects services, because that is 80% of the UK economy. But what the Prime Minister did instead was she said, the most important thing for me is cracking down on freedom of movement. So I will do everything that I can in any proposition that I put forward to ensure that freedom of movement is cracked down on rather than the economy is protected. So that was a ridiculous red line to begin with. The reason that we're in this situation over exit day, and it would be great if the ministers on the front bench could make this clear if there is any summing up at the end of this. The reason that we're in this issue over the exit date is because of the Prime Minister's ridiculous red line about the EU elections. Mm. It is absolutely ridiculous that it should be laid down that we refuse to take part in the EU elections. We are ready and willing and able to take part in these EU elections, and I think we would do rather well in those elections, absolutely, in fact. And I agree with my honourable friend from Edinburgh East that actually UKIP would see a number of votes reduced and a number of seats reduced. And I was a bit shocked to see the member from Vauxhall earlier suggesting that the Labour Party should be courting those UKIP votes and trying to get those people who used to vote UKIP and now vote Labour to stay on board, because frankly there's a lot of those votes that I would rather not have if I was given that option. Now, a number of... I want to talk about the government's lack of preparedness in this. The Secretary of State for Scotland this morning suggested that the Scottish Government had not embraced Brexit and was not therefore prepared for the Prime Minister's deal to happen in the event of Brexit. But the UK Government is also not prepared for Brexit. That's why they're having to ask for an extension, even if the Prime Minister's deal had been approved or was approved this week. They're still not prepared for that Brexit to happen. Mr Speaker, I sit on the European Statutory Instruments Sifting Committee. The Statutory Instruments Sifting Committee did not meet this Tuesday because there were no proposed negatives for it to discuss. It's not proposed to sit next Tuesday because there are no proposed negatives for it to discuss. I've been asking Does this mean that there are no proposed negatives left? But apparently what it means is that we're not getting a recess. And that, in fact, this committee will sit the week after and we'll discuss the proposed negatives during that week. The UK government has failed at every opportunity to prepare adequately. It has set absolutely unreasonable red lines. What it should be doing now is going to the EU and saying we need to have a longer extension so that we can adequately prepare. We are happy to take part in the EU elections as a result. And my preferred position is that we should have a people's vote so there is a clear option given to the people. They can choose between the option of remaining in the EU or whatever deal this House thinks that it would like to put to them.
I thank the honourable friend for giving way. She's making an excellent speech and summing up brilliantly just the exact guddle that this Conservative government has got itself into. And is it not the case that it's the worst kind of loser that blames its opposition or its opponent for its own mess? And this government is not only completely screwing up the Brexit negotiations and the whole of the UK, but it is asleep at the wheel in government and cannot even replace its disability minister, offending and not properly representing people with disabilities across the UK. It is utterly shameful.
My honourable friend is absolutely correct. This is a complete and total mess, not just over things like not being able to replace a disability minister. I understand that the Prime Minister has lost 28 ministers. The previous three Prime Ministers have reached about a combined total of losing 28 ministers during their time. The last issue that I want to raise, Mr Speaker, is the issue of the fact that EU settled status is not sorted out. People's jobs, people's livelihoods and people's living standards, people's lives are being put at risk by the decisions and the lack of preparedness by this government. But we will be supporting this SI, we will be supporting the extension, but it should be a longer one.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mark Francois.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. I'll try and be brief so that my friend can Wantage can get in too. I'll have a go. Sorry.
One also wishes to contribute, so I know that he'll exercise enormous self-denying ordinance. Mark Francois.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. We're debating tonight whether or not to extend Article 50. The thing I'd like to touch on very briefly is whether the EU would ever countenance a further extension. And I say this because from 2007 to 2010, when we were on those benches, I was the party's Shadow Europe Minister. I did the Lisbon Treaty working with William Hague, and that was my epiphany. 14 days in this place, couldn't change a single punctuation mark. That's when I realised we had to leave. But in those 3 years, I hope the Minister will accept, I spent a lot of time visiting the institutions of the European Union because that was my job. And I came to realise that for many people in the EU, particularly, though not exclusively in the Commission, what is often referred to as the European project has the status almost of a religious act of faith. People passionately believe in it, and it transcends almost all other considerations, and it must be promoted almost at all costs and protected almost at all costs. Very many people in the EU were utterly shocked when the UK voted to leave. Absolutely stunned. Because what we had done in their world was an act of heresy. It was apostasy to leave. And many people believed we should be punished, not least pour encourage les autres. But what they're even more worried about, is the UK taking part in European elections, which would bring 73 UK MEPs into the Parliament, many of whom would be likely to be Eurosceptic, though not all, which would completely upset the calculations that they have made, as it were, to reconfigure the new Parliament in order to keep out what they call the populists from Eastern Europe and, for instance, the Lega Nord from Italy. That is why they wouldn't accept the extension to the 30th of June. They insisted either on the 22nd of May or the 12th of April, which is the drop-dead date for when we'd have to begin European election preparation in the United Kingdom. So my argument, Mr Speaker, very simply is this. I believe for the EU, protecting the integrity of the Parliament, which under the co-decision procedure under Lisbon has much greater power now relative to the other institutions, would be even more important to those who really believe in the project than trying to keep the United Kingdom in the EU, though many would like that. And therefore, if I'm right, they would not countenance any further extension beyond the dates that have been given, because it would muck up the European Parliament, and from Macron's point of view, that would spoil his plans to federalise the European Union. So my argument, Mr Speaker, is we shouldn't be worried about a very long extension, because I believe, though I cannot prove it in the House tonight, they'll never grant it. They don't want, under any circumstances, to go beyond the 12th of April, because it means European elections that they simply cannot stomach, because there'd be 35 to 40 Eurosceptic British MEPs that completely rip up their plan for the Parliament. So I believe, I believe on that basis, Mr Speaker, the threat of a long extension has always been a false one, and if we get to the 12th of April, we can leave. Because I believe that those who believe in the project would not allow the extension. And finally, the government spent £9 million sending a document to every household in this country before the referendum saying this is a once-in-a-generation decision, this is your decision, and we will implement what you decide. If the people in this House overturn that decision, the people will be extremely angry. Don't say you weren't warned.
Is the Right Honourable Gentleman giving way, or has he completed his speech? He's finished. Very good of him to guide me, but in fact I was going to call Mr Double and then Mr Vasey. Both of you. Oh, but you can divide it between you.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. There have been many very good speeches made this evening about the validity of this instrument that we are being asked to vote on tonight. But what I want to talk about very briefly is what I believe what is taking place here tonight looks like to the British people, particularly the 17.4 million people who voted to leave the EU. Because many of the British people have put their trust in this place when we have told them that we will be leaving the EU on the 29th of March in just 2 days' time. And tonight, passing this the statutory instrument to delay that date, I believe is a break of trust with the British people who have trusted us, taken us at our word, when we said we would be leaving at the end of this month. And I believe that there are many people who are concerned that Brexit is being stolen by the establishment of this place, and the passing of this instrument tonight is another step towards that taking place. But the other thing I would say, Mr Speaker, is that many people will feel this is wrong, for the very reason that has been made many times, that we've been told that we don't have a choice tonight, that the EU have already made this decision for us, that the date we're going to leave is going to be delayed, and it's irrelevant what we do tonight because the decision has already been made and therefore we should just pass it through. If we wanted an example of why many of the 17.4 million people voted to leave, that is it. It is that this House, any pretence that this House has sovereignty over our own rules. We can't even decide for ourselves the date we're going to leave. We've been told by the EU. We couldn't even get the date that we wanted, that they negotiated away. And therefore, tonight, Mr Speaker, I will be keeping trust with the word we gave the British people when we said we'd be leaving on the 29th of March, and I will not be supporting the statutory instrument tonight.
Edward Vasey.
Mr Speaker, everyone on this side of the House has spoken again. I've just got time to say I fully support it, and I cede my place to the honourable member.
Mr Speaker, this government has had half the time it took to fight the Second World War. It has had two-thirds of the time it took to fight the First World War. It has had the entire length of the Kennedy administration in which the groundwork was laid for a successful moonshot. The idea that we need more time is nonsense. They have had plenty of time. They have not used it well enough, and we should just leave.
Mr. West Streeting.
I would just... thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just, further to that excellent speech, I would just point out that it took 7 years to organise a two-week sporting event in the London Olympics, so I think extracting ourselves from the most sophisticated and political economic alliance in the history of the world probably does take a bit longer.
Thank you. Order. Under the standing order, I must now put the question. The question is motion number 4, as on the order paper. As many as are of that opinion, say aye.
Aye.
Of the contrary, no.
Aye.
Division. Clear the lobby.
My children, but I couldn't speak to them. They were crying.
Hello, I'm Neil Nunes with the BBC News. The British Prime Minister Theresa May has told legislators from her Conservative Party that she'll step down if Parliament approves her union. She said she appreciated there was a desire for new leadership in the second phase of Brexit negotiations. Meanwhile, British MPs have held non-binding votes on 8 alternative courses of action on Brexit, ranging from leaving the EU without a deal to cancelling Brexit altogether. The results will be announced later. Here's Dana Eberhard.
Britain sometimes likes to refer to its legislature, somewhat hubristically, as the mother of all parliaments. But the 3-year gestation of Brexit has brought it to its knees. The deadlock has seen MPs twice reject, by huge margins, the deal Mrs May negotiated with the EU. They've also voted against leaving without a deal. Today marked a change. MPs have seized control of parliamentary time to the government's anger. They're seeking to outline an approach they might be able to agree on. Meanwhile, Mrs May is fighting a rearguard action for her deal. She'll sacrifice her own leadership in a last-ditch effort to get hardline pro-Brexit rebels in her party to back it. Even that gambit may fail.
A furious ruling party, the FLN, has backed calls to
the question is motion number 4, as on the order paper. As many as are there opinions, say
aye.
Of the contrary, no. Tell us for the ayes, Mike Freer and Joe Churchill. Tell us for the noes, Mr. Peter Bone and Mr. Philip Hollowbone.
$50,000. Thank you.
grind your claws, you howl, you growl, and are afraid of Apollo. You run, you free, you climb and dress trees, you reignite. You growl, you howl, you show your teeth, you bite. It's alright, you say no more. You use your eyes, the world goes and flutters by. You use your eyes.
Thank you.
you come to that.
Persian dream. drunkard here follows me. Yes, I can take him to your house, but I can't unlock it. You see, you forgot to leave me with the key. Ah, where are you tonight, sweet Marie? Jail where all the mail showed that a man can't give his address out to bad company. And now I stand you here looking at your yellow railroad in the ruins of your balcony, wondering where tonight, sweet Marie.
Thank you.
жалоба зависа мен от снеби за газез, от снеби да каво уреписе, вих се не паме ми хварди, радом гатам черо да шеди, ме маин сме на пари сме черо да. Ich sehe nicht mehr.